get my shoes and out the door. 5, I'm alive. 6, 7, 8, feeling great.
Hello and welcome back to Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. My name is Dr. Noah DeCoyer and I am your co-host. Today our guest is Dr. Alvin Dannenberg. For those of you who enjoyed our first interview about a year or so ago, I mentioned that we would have him back once his new book was being released. And in just about a month or so, or maybe less, that's going to happen. Welcome back, Doc. How are you today?
I am great. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So the book's name is Crazy Good Living, Healthy Gums, Healthy Gut, Healthy Living, Feeding Your Body from Cradle to Grave. What do you think about that name, Alvin?
Yeah, it's pretty inclusive. What do you think?
I think so, too. Let me do your bio, and then we'll dive right in, okay?
Sure.
All right. So Dr. Dannenberg is a periodontist. He received his dental degree from the Baltimore College of Dental Surgery in 1972 and his specialty certificate in periodontics from the University of Maryland School of Graduate Dentistry in 1974. He now practices in Bluffton, South Carolina. He divides his 43-year dental career into two periods, before and after the laser, coupled with the dynamics of ancestral nutrition. The laser-based LANAP protocol and the importance of ancestral nutrition, he believes, are revolutionizing his treatment of gum disease. LANAP is an acronym for laser-assisted new attachment procedure and requires no scalpel or sutures. In July 2014, he received a Certificate of Functional Medicine Practitioner designation, and in September 2014, as did I, he received his designation of Certified Primal Health Coach. In July 2015, Dr. Dannenberg created the Integrative Periodontal Module for the College of Integrative Medicine's 300-hour certified program. This is, like I said, Alvin, you got a lot going on. In December 2016, he created a 5-part, 7-hour CE-accredited course for dentists and dental hygienists titled Beat the Beast of Dental Disease. In April 2017, he was awarded the designation of Adapt Trained Health Professional from the Kresser Institute, the only functional medicine and evolutionary health training company. His new book, Crazy Good Living, will be published by Electra Press on July 15, 2017. And his website is www.drdannenberg.com.
That's wow. About it. Huh?
That's a heck of a bio, buddy.
It wraps me up.
So let's start here. Just so the few people that didn't listen to our first interview, and maybe it'll spark a few people to go back and listen to it. How about a little bit about yourself? How did you go from being a periodontist to this highly trained functional medicine ancestral health doc?
You know, it's interesting. Everybody has a turning point before they can get motivated to do something. Some people just need to learn new information and that sparks their interest. Some people have to have an experience, like a life-threatening experience, which I had. Some people just have to get married and they want to spend the rest of the time with their spouse. Some older people like me have grandkids. They want to see their grandkids grow to be adults. But certain things spark different people in different ways to make a change or just to be motivated to do something. So when I'm 59 years old, I thought I was basically a very healthy guy. I exercise, maybe jogging 40 minutes or doing other aerobic exercise 40 minutes to an hour, maybe 4 to 5 days a week. I ate what I thought was healthy food. I ate low fat. I ate lots of carbs and fiber. Popcorn was my favorite food. I mean, I thought I was doing okay. And at the age of 59, I had a stroke. So I had this stroke, and my doctors saved my life. They put me on 7 medications for the rest of my life. And that's the end of the story as far as they were concerned. For me, that didn't cut it. So I was not going to take medication for the rest of my life and figure out that I was doomed to degenerative problems. So from the age of 59 to about 66, I started to do some research to figure out what I needed to get healthy. And it was not easy to find information, but I went to the major sources like the American Heart Association, the American Cancer Society, the American Diabetic Association. These organizations supposedly professed knowing what you needed to do to be healthy. So I followed all these recommendations. And until I was 66, I was still on my seven medicines, and I weighed a weight that I'll tell you about in a second. And then I took this course. And when I was 66, I took a course at the Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health. And it was an integrative nutritional course for healthcare professionals. 5-day intensive program. I thought it was going to kind of summarize everything I was learning for the previous seven years or so and really put it together for me so I knew I was in the right direction, going on the right track. So the course was basically a course in primal nutrition. Or at least it started out that way. And I didn't even know the term primal nutrition at that point. And the first instructor, who now is one of my best friends, blew me away. And the remaining 5 days, various instructors discussed their major topics of concern. And I realized that everything I was doing for the last 7 years, from all this research, from all these medical organizations, was totally wrong, at least wrong for me. So I decided at the end of 5 days, I needed to make a change. I called my wife before I traveled back home, and I said, "Sue, we're going to make some changes." By the time I got home, she and I bumped heads a little bit, but she said she'll give me 30 days and see what happens. So we cleaned out from our kitchen and pantry and freezer and refrigerator all the processed foods and packaged foods that we had. Almost all of our cupboards were bare. We had 7 bags of groceries that we took to the food bank. Then I started buying food from a local farm service. We had organic foods, fruits and vegetables. We had wild-caught meats, pastured meats and wild-caught fish and nuts and seeds. And I basically went from the standard American diet that I thought was healthy to basically a paleo Mediterranean type of lifestyle. And it changed my life. I lost from the age of 66 until now. I'm 70. I've lost a little more than 30 pounds. I'm on 2 of the 7 medications, and I only take them intermittently. I'm going to be phasing out of those shortly. And I am healthier today than I've ever been. And not only did I find things like this improved my health, but I figured it was going to help my patients. So I incorporated these concepts of nutrition and lifestyle with my patients and with the research that I've done and the degrees that I've or certifications that I've gathered. I have learned that nutrition and lifestyle are not only critical for overall health, but the health of the gingival tissues, the mouth health, the dental health. And by putting all of this together, I think patients and anyone who wants to open their ears and listen can treat their chronic diseases that they have and prevent chronic diseases in the future by just understanding basic ancestral nutrition and lifestyle. And that's where I am.
So, it's a beautiful place to be. You mentioned 2 things there, and it basically leads into my next 2 questions. And I'm going to kind of give them to you, and then you can take it any which way you want. Okay. Number one, you know, how does the book differ than other diet and health and nutrition books? And secondarily, as a dentist, periodontist, you know, how does that make your perspective different? Because, I mean, many people know that the health of your mouth and your teeth and your gums are extremely important. But, you know, I think you take that to the next level. So take that any way you want to go.
Sure. So my book is not a diet book. It's a lifestyle book. And it's just not eating healthy and that's the end of the story. I believe there are 4 pillars to health. There may be a whole lot more, but I think I can summarize it in 4 pillars, which I talk about in the book. One is a nutrient-dense anti-inflammatory diet, critical for your body's individual cells to get what they need. You know, if you had a very expensive car, let's say a Lamborghini or whatever, you're spending a tremendous amount of money. You're probably babying that car to the nth degree, and you're putting in the highest test gasoline and making sure the oil is changed exactly correctly. And you're just making sure this machine functions for the number of years that you want it to function. Well, a nutrient-dense anti-inflammatory diet does this for your body. Your body is the only machine that's going to carry you from today till you die. It only makes sense to take care of it like you would a Lamborghini. Who does that today? Very few people. So the four pillars of health are the nutrient-dense anti-inflammatory diet, but also, I believe, efficient exercise, restorative sleep, and stress reduction, which is such a critical factor. It's not really understood that much, but I can tell you that when you are stressed emotionally, not only physically, but emotionally stressed, it affects your gut, it affects your mouth, it affects your overall health. Even if you're doing all of the other three very, very well, that could be your downfall. So all four pillars are critical, like four legs of a dining room chair. If you removed or broke one of those legs, it'll topple over. Although the other three legs are strong, that fourth leg needs to be there. So these four pillars of health, I think, are important. So that my book is different in that it goes into a lifestyle and not just a diet. I don't believe in diets. As a periodontist, of course, I'm looking at nutrition in a different way because I'm understanding the mouth is the mirror to the body. And I'm understanding everybody talks about nutrition, but they only talk about nutrition once it gets into the gut. I mean, your mouth is the beginning of this nutritional highway. So we have to have a healthy mouth. And what's really interesting is that what's happening in the gut more than likely begins the effect in the mouth. So the mouth bacteria, and there's a host of bacteria in the mouth and microbes, are there in a state of homeostasis, just like the bacteria in your gut are there in a state of homeostasis, a balance. Your body needs the 100 trillion microbes in it. We have 10 trillion human cells and 100 trillion microbial cells. These microbes are critical for health. There are good microbes, there are bad microbes, but they're in a state of balance. When the bad microbes get out of balance because of maybe bad food choices, maybe toxic substances that are in the foods that we're eating or air that we're breathing, maybe certain dental procedures are putting toxic substances in our body that last until those substances are removed, possibly stress changing the bacteria in the gut, all of these things will change the structure of our healthy microbes. And then it can affect the gut lining, and then it can affect other organs, including the mouth. So there are some great studies that show that when there is gut dysbiosis, or this imbalance in bacteria in the gut, it changes the bacteria in the saliva. So the bacteria in the mouth start to overpopulate with some bad stuff, and we're eating, unfortunately, unhealthy foods that feed the bad bacteria now in the mouth. And they're feeding the bad bacteria in the gut, and you begin to develop a vicious cycle. So you have a source of infection getting into the bloodstream from your gut and creating chronic inflammation and all kinds of chronic diseases. And you're also developing a source of chronic inflammation that is pouring into the bloodstream through the infected gum space when you have periodontal disease. So these two areas need to be taken care of. There's so much research now that talks about the importance of a healthy gum environment in the mouth to prevent cardiovascular disease, for example. Well, that's important and that's critical, but not just the mouth bacteria in the infected gum area. It's the infected bacteria or the dysbiotic bacteria in the gut. So both areas need to be treated. So I see that as a very important element to overall health. And there are a lot of functional medicine doctors that understand gut health, but they don't understand the dysbiotic gut health creating the dysbiotic oral microbe health. And then they're only treating the gut health and ignoring the mouth health, which they don't really understand. And they still have a nidus of infection in the mouth that can still affect the entire body, even though the gut health is slowly getting healthier. So this is where I come from. I think that The mouth is important. The gut is important. You heal the gut, you can heal the mouth. You heal the gut and the mouth, you can heal the entire body, I believe. And it's just not nutrition, like I said. We've got to be under totally aware of what's going on with exercise. It has to be efficient, not overdoing exercise, not creating oxidative stress that is highly inflammatory. We have to understand stress reduction, like I mentioned, and certainly restorative sleep, which has a huge effect on the microbiome in the mouth as well as overall health. So that's where I'm coming from, and that's what the book is all about.
So, all right, so let's break those down just a little bit more for our audience. So let's start with number one. Give the audience an idea. When you talk about nutrient-dense, anti-inflammatory foods, you know, what are we talking about there? Because there's still a lot of monikers there, paleo, primal, ketogenic, da-da-da-da-da. When you talk nutrient density, anti-inflammatory foods, what are we talking about?
Sure. So there are certain foods that are inflammatory, creates inflammation in the gut and inflammation in the circulatory system. Those foods are basically the foods that can't get digested well. These are the foods that have anti-nutrients that irritate the gut lining. These are nutrients that inherently are inflammatory, creating free radicals. And these would be, for example, the grains. Processed grains are a problem, but grains in general are a problem in the gut. Our enzymes have never evolved to the point where we can digest the complex proteins in grains to the extent that they are completely broken down to amino acids. There are sugars, free sugars. These are the sugars that are added to foods chemically or processed because foods that are concentrated and heavy amounts of sugar are added because of this concentrated sugar, or omega-6 fatty acids, which are the oils, vegetable seed oils that are processed and are highly inflammatory. So these are the three food groups, per se, that can be very unhealthy to the body. Nutrient-dense foods are those foods that have a lot of nutrients per calorie of food. So you get a real big bang for your buck. And they are basically the foods that our ancestors have eaten throughout the world. It's not the same everywhere because different environments have different foods. But these are foods that do not have toxic substances that are added. These are not genetically modified foods. These are not processed foods that are heated and damaged and deconstructed from their natural structure. So these are the foods that are animal products, that are animals that are living in their natural environment, either pastured. If they're cattle, for example, they're eating grass and not grains. They're finished with grass and not grains. If it's fish, these are fish that are free swimming in the oceans and lakes. It's not farmed fish. And eggs, for example, are from chickens that can eat the bugs and everything in the dirt because this is what they eat, and that's what gets into a healthy egg. So it's pastured animal products, wild-caught animal products, basically almost all fruits and vegetables. Certainly fruits can be very highly concentrated in sugar, so you have to be careful about that. But for the most part, fruits and vegetables, and nuts and seeds. And some nuts and seeds have to be soaked for overnight to get rid of some of the anti-nutrients that are on the surface. But basically, these are the foods that are nutrient-dense and anti-inflammatory. Certainly, organ meats are extremely healthy. As a matter of fact, some primal societies eat the organ meats and throw away the actual muscle meat because they know that the organ meats are extremely nutrient dense, like kidneys and liver and heart and those types of things. Seafood, phenomenally healthy. This is the only place that you can get DHA and EPA in a natural sourcing. So these are the foods that I recommend as a nutrient dense anti-inflammatory choice. Now, you can select the ones that you want. You just need to know that you need to eat a tremendous amount of non-starchy vegetables. Select the ones that you like the best, but make sure that they have all kinds of colors to them. You need to eat the healthy fats. You need to eat these pastured wild-caught animals, and you need to eat the maybe starchy tubers and fruits and vegetables, ideally berries And this is part of your overall plate composition. If you looked at a plate, a little more than half of the plate should be non-starchy vegetables. A little less than a quarter should be healthy protein sources. And the other less than a quarter could be a combination of maybe a starchy tuber, some nuts and seeds, and some berries or whatever. So this is how I put together a nutrient-dense anti-inflammatory diet.
Right. Now, in your book, there's lists of these foods. There's several recipes that you created to just help people grab a hold of this, right?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it's been really fun. I never was much for being a cook in the kitchen, but after I started learning and experiencing a healthier lifestyle and a healthier diet, I started to get excited about certain foods that I could actually prepare in the house, because you can't find everything outside, although you can find quite a bit that's already prepared. But I'm looking at recipes and I'm saying, well, I can't use this recipe, I can't use that recipe, because it's got things that I don't want to eat in it. So I'm creating recipes. So I've put together, I don't know, maybe 40, 45 pretty much original recipes. I've taken ideas of traditional recipes, but everything in my book is mine as far as being tweaked with natural, healthy products. Everything is organic. And these recipes I make for myself and my wife all the time. So I know that these work for me, for my tastes. It's really fun and it's delicious. And most of recipes, you know, you can make a large quantity, freeze them, and then you can have food for the next several meals.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of tricks to eating this way, which I try to talk to my patients about, and it's a lot of our different programs. I mean, just simple things like making a half a dozen sweet potatoes and then putting them in the freezer. Always having sure. 4 to 6 ripe avocados around. I mean, these things are really easy and readily available. It just takes a tiny bit of thought and planning.
Correct. Smoothies are a favorite of mine because I can make a smoothie, and my basic smoothie is what I would consider some power greens like spinach and kale and Swiss chard. Even dandelions are terrific. And I put them in I use a Vitamix blender, but any high-powered blender. I use a variety of different berries. I like blueberries especially. I like blackberries, strawberries. So I put them in the blender. I put a banana in it to make it a little sweeter, and an avocado to make it nice and creamy. And I fill it with some filtered water to the top and spin it down. So I make these smoothies, and I make enough that I can literally put it in the refrigerator and it'll last several days. And whenever I want to have a drink and I don't want to drink water, I don't want to drink tea or coffee or whatever it is that I don't want to drink, the smoothie is there. And it serves as a very healthy leafy green vegetable, healthy fat, some healthy fruit. It's all there in a quick-to-consume drink, which is great. And like you said, you can put together a variety of things in bulk and then put them in the refrigerator, in the freezer, and it's always there for you. It's great.
Totally agree. Now, let's talk a little bit about, you know, exercise or efficient exercise.
I have learned that I'm not an athlete. I don't go to the gym. I have learned, especially from Mark Sisson, who's brilliant. I have learned that there are 4 basic exercises that take care of the majority of the body to be basically weight training. And that would be considered planks, pull-ups, squat, and push-ups. Those 4 exercises I can do maybe twice a week, letting my body rest between these periods of time, and I get my weight training in that regard. Then there is a process called high-intensity interval training that you exercise in a very anaerobic state for a very short period of time, and it has significant benefits primarily for the mitochondria of every cell in your body. And high-intensity interval training, the way I do it, is I exercise, and I'll explain how I do that, for 25 to 30 seconds at a very intense rate. Then I rest for about a minute and a half, and that's one cycle. And then I do that for maybe 4 to 6 cycles. I have maybe a 2-minute warm up and a 2-minute cool down. So in all, maybe it takes 15, 20 minutes to do this little period of high intensity interval training. And I do that about once a week. So I'm doing this weight training twice a week, high intensity interval training once a week. And then I do some aerobic exercise. I have a little thing called a trike, T-R-I-K-K-E. It's a great little fun thing that I can ride outside. It's almost like 2 skateboards that are connected in the front, and you stand on it with a pole and handlebars, and you shake your hips, and it starts to move, and you can go about 10 miles in an hour or so, and I just tootle around the neighborhood for maybe 40 minutes or so, maybe once or twice a week. My high-intensity interval training is actually on a Nordic track cross-country skier. So if you've ever seen a cross-country skier, you're putting your feet in and you have these handlebars that you or cords that you use like ski poles, and you just ski back and forth in a stationary way. And I do that so hard for 25 to 30 seconds that I am almost out of breath, and that's why I take the next minute and a half to cool down, and that's one cycle. And those periods of exercise help me, I think, to be physically fit. Then I have to do what would be considered non-exercise movement. I stand almost all the time. I don't sit at a desk anymore. And when I'm seeing patients, I sit, but I'm only doing that once a week these days. But I stand most of the time. I walk quite a bit. I try to walk 2 or 3 miles every day outside, and then all the walking I do after that adds up to maybe 5 miles or so a day, which is about 10,000 steps, and I think that's a critical factor. So this is my efficient exercise. I do not go to the gym. I'm not saying don't go to the gym. I just don't do it. I don't use weights. I don't use I don't do CrossFit. Not that CrossFit is bad, but you can overdo CrossFit and not give yourself enough time for your body to repair before you go on to the next exercise. So this is how I do it. I think it is efficient based on Mark Sisson's research and all of his books and the training that I and you know have done with the Primal Health Coach training. The science is there, and it makes sense to me.
Yeah, I do and teach the same thing to my patients, and in the courses that we create, I teach those 4 primal movements. I think they're critical. I mean, I do those one to two times a week as well. For me, in between, I go to a yoga studio 3 or 4 times a week, and I do quite a bit of box jumps. So that's how that's my take. That's, you know, a little bit different on your take, but similar concepts. And I think that it's the right way to exercise for most people.
I agree. And I think that our bodies are designed to do those types of exercises or those types of movements, and are not designed to do intensive marathon running every day of the week. And some people do that. And a lot of people that do that, after decades go by, they start to develop significant hip problems, knee problems, and other joint problems because of the pounding pressures on these joints.
I agree. I've been there before, and I don't think I'll be going back. How about a little bit on restorative sleep? You know, on our podcast, we've interviewed like 3 of the really most renowned sleep experts, and I think your take will be similar. But, you know, what are some of your concepts on the restorative sleep?
I think that sleep obviously is a critical factor. You have to be prepared to sleep before you can sleep well. You have to eat a healthy diet. It's not necessarily the diet that I'm recommending, but a healthy diet. I do think my diet is a very healthy diet. The way I eat is a healthy way of life. And you want to have foods that are going to satisfy and create enough stimulation to the rest of your body that you don't wake up in the middle of the night starved. So some people need to have some heavy starchy carbs before they go to bed to help them sleep. Some people don't need that or don't want that, and they stop their eating 2 hours or 3 hours before they go to sleep. But I think it's very critical that you have a dark room, a cool room, no lights that are available, especially the red lights. The blue lights, you need to try to get all of these lights out of your vision and your room, and that restorative sleep should begin somewhere between the hours of 9 to maybe 11 o'clock at night. You should be sleeping about 7 to 9 hours, depending on you, but 7 to 9 hours of good rested sleep. And that's restorative. And when you're sleeping, your body is repairing itself. And there are some great studies that show sleep deprivation creates a host of biological problems. So restorative sleep is critical. And I just summarize it in a very simple way, like I just explained it to you.
I agree with everything you said there. And finally, reduction of stress in our lives. That's kind of the sticky. That's always been one of my sticking points along with sleep.
I don't have any problem sleeping. I can sleep anywhere. But stress, that's another story. I guess you and I and a lot of people that I would say I'm somewhat entrepreneurial. I certainly would be considered a type A personality. Therefore, I push hard sometimes and I let things externally bother me. So emotional stress is such a difficult thing. I go into some detail in my book about different ways of reducing emotional stress. Certainly, you know that yoga like you're doing and meditation and deep breathing and muscle relaxation techniques, all of these are fantastic. And you still have to have the right frame of mind. You have to think about what is bothering you. How important is that particular thing that's bothering you? If you can't solve that problem, kind of remove it from your mind, and anything that you can solve, try to solve it. But it's not only emotional stress that is a problem. It could be physical stress. It could be chemical stress. Things that are in your mouth can be stressing your body. Toxins that may be placed in your teeth could be stressing your body. Foods that you're eating that are sprayed with glyphosate could be stressing your body. And all of these things add to a stress load that can go out of whack and affects everything in your body. All organ systems are affected. So stress is just not the emotional stress where one person is yelling about with another person or one person is worried about a situation. Stress is the physical and chemical aspects also. So we need to be aware of it, identify it. We need to be very mindful with what we're doing and think in terms of improving a situation if we can improve it. We can't improve it. We have to let it go.
Well said. And I agree. You know, James Maskell talks a lot about sociogenomics and so, you know, then the blue zones, just having a strong social.
Yes.
Just a strong social network is extremely important for stress reduction.
Yes. And that is more critical than most people even think about.
Totally.
And that's something that needs to be addressed much, much more.
Totally agree. Now, okay, so I have two other questions. Actually, three other questions. I'd like to get to those before we end. Number one,
sure.
I'd like you to summarize chapter 24 in your book, Why the Tooth Fairies Gave Up Grains.
Okay, so you read my book. There you go. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you this story. By the way, there are no such things as tooth fairies, but I wrote this funny little story. There was a woman who owned a health newsletter in the Buford, Bluffton, Hilton Head area. And she asked me to write something that could be related to young kids or young adults could read it and find it whimsical and actually educational. So I wrote this story about the tooth fairies that have been around forever and ever, and they realized that children were getting sicker and sicker because of the foods that they ate. And so they made their mission in life to remove grains and free sugars from diets, and they were teaching children how to do this so that their health was going to be much more secure as they became older adults and created a quality of life, not quantity of life. I have no, my concern is not the amount of years that I live. My concern is the quality of life. Whatever point in time I'm going to die, I would love to be unbelievably healthy until I drop dead. So this is the quality of life that I'm thinking about. So the story about why the Tooth Fairy gave up grains is a story that I've just related that parents could read to their kids or young adults could read themselves and kind of put a smile on their face and understand that there is a message to this story. So that's what it was. And then in this lady's article, she had questions from parents of what they could do to make their children's diets healthier. So I went into a discussion of do this, do that, and the adult in the house is the one who has to set the standard, and you can't bring Mountain Dew, maybe I shouldn't say the name, but you can't bring sodas into the house. And then expect the kids not to drink sugar water. I mean, you got to be prudent and proactive. You got to make the house clean and healthy so that the kids learn this is the way to eat. So if they screw up when they go out with their friends, it's not like they're doing it all the time. And if they understand what they need to do in the house, it'll get through to them eventually. And they'll make their own choices. Hopefully, they'll be good choices. If they're not good choices, you can only do your best. But you have to start out by doing your best at home. So this is what the article was all about.
Great. I thought it was a great addition.
Thanks.
I'd like
it. No one's ever asked me a question about that. That's really good. Yeah. I need to remember that. Yeah. Chapter 24. Okay.
Yeah, chapter 24. Now, the other question I have, and it's at near the end of the book, and I'd like, because I think it's really important. The small study it did with Ramil Nagel regarding whole food supplement and some of the findings you found in blood work and in their oral cavity. That's a neat study.
Yeah. So let me just tell you, this is not a controlled study. So I didn't have a control group. This is not a study that could be published because the qualifications to publish studies are very, very strict today. So I did it as a periodontist. I'm a licensed periodontist in the state of South Carolina. Obviously, I can treat my patients accordingly. So I had, I'm not sure, 13 patients or so. I had these patients. All of these patients had active gum disease. All of these patients were going to be treated by me. But before we started active treatment, these patients enlisted and wanted to participate in this whole food type of supplement study to see if we could make their mouths healthier. So all of these patients, I examined their mouths. I did the testing to see how infected their gums were. We did some blood tests to see if they had inflammation markers. And we did not change anything in the way they lived. We didn't change anything in their diet, except they started taking a fermented cod liver oil with a high vitamin butter supplement that was all natural, which we got from Green Pasture, greenpasture.org. And we had some real kelp product capsules. It was not just iodine. It was a process because it was dehydrated kelp. And they took this every day for 30 days. They took it actually for 6 days and they stopped one day. They took it for another 6 days. They stopped one day. So at the end of 30 days, we remeasured all the gum pockets and signs of inflammation and their blood markers, their inflammation markers. It turned out that the blood inflammation markers didn't change because we really didn't stop active disease. We didn't treat the active disease, and that's a critical thing. We didn't treat any active gut problems. But we did see a significant decrease in the inflammation and bleeding and pocket depths around these infected gums. So it is an awareness for me that healthy food makes a difference. But I've got to tell you, and I know the study is in the book, but I got to tell you that there was a recent study that was just published last year, so it's not in the book, And it was published by Dr. Johann Wober, who is a periodontist in Germany and also a researcher. And he did this study that is brilliant. He took 15 people, and five of the people were part of the control group, and 10 were the experimental group. All 15 people had active gum disease, and they tested the markers, and they tested a bleeding and inflammation. They also tested the types of bacteria that were around the gum tissue. All of the 15 people had to, they could brush their teeth the normal way that they did. They could, but they could not use dental floss or little cleaning brushes between the teeth. The five people that were the control group, they had to eat the same junky diet that they were eating. These people were eating basically a standard American diet. And like I said, they all had gum disease. The 10 experimental group, again, they could brush their teeth normally, but they couldn't clean between the teeth. But they had to begin eating pretty much a paleo slash Mediterranean diet. It was very strictly controlled. At the end of 4 weeks, the control group, this is the group that couldn't clean between the teeth, but they ate their junky food, had significantly more inflammation, bleeding on probing, and lots of plaque. The experimental group that ate the healthy diet, they cleaned their mouth with the toothbrush normally, but they could not clean between the teeth, just like the control group. Their mouths had significantly less bleeding on probing, less pocket depths, and lots of bacteria, but they were in a state of homeostasis. Now, this is a very important study because these people were not treated for gum disease. These people were treated for a nutrient-dense, anti-inflammatory diet. And true, the plaque levels grew in both groups, but the plaque level that grew in the healthy diet group were not causing gum disease. This is a significant factor, a significant study. And I think that the ramifications of this study go far beyond the mouth because it's related to the gut. It's related to chronic inflammation. It's related to degenerative diseases that manifest decades after all the insults are there. So, my study that I reported on is just a drop in the bucket, but this is the stuff that's getting researched today that is just mind-boggling. We need to educate people early enough so they don't have to have these degenerative diseases that they start to feel like they need to repair from. It's much easier to prevent the disease than to treat it after it occurs.
Totally agree. I can't agree more. Do you have time for one more question?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, so you're going to be my guinea pig. I was asked this on a recent podcast, and I'm going to start asking it at the end of my podcasts. Can you explain the day in the life of Dr. Al Dannenberg when you wake up through bedtime?
Fantastic. So actually, I wrote a blog that is called My Primal Lifestyle. So I actually talk about what I eat for breakfast, what I eat for lunch, what I eat for dinner, how I exercise, how I sleep. It's all in this little thing. But I'll tell you, basically, I wake up early. I wake up if I'm going to see patients that day because my office is an hour away from me. I wake up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning and get ready. Normally, I am up no later than 6 o'clock, maybe 5:30, and my day starts. I hardly ever during the week have breakfast. I have a cup of coffee. Basically, it would be a bulletproof type coffee from Dave Asprey's concept, but I add sometimes some things like cinnamon and raw cacao powder. And I go about my day. I write tremendously. I just write all the time. So I write some blogs. I read some blogs. I answer some questions. I do some Skype consultations with some patients all around the world, which is so much fun. And then maybe I'll get hungry come 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, and then I will eat. And generally, I'm going to have one of my smoothies that I just mentioned, and or some eggs over a bunch of salad greens. Sometimes I have some salmon. I love liver, so I have liver two or three times a week, basically chicken liver or goose liver or duck liver. I have it either prepared already or I just eat liver and onions, that kind of thing. And then I will see if I am ready for some exercise. I might go outside and walk my 2 or 3 miles. I may do my high-intensity interval training probably before I eat lunch, then once a week, or my other weight training exercise again before I eat lunch twice a week. And then I do watch some TV, which I like. I will certainly argue with my wife a couple times, and then we'll have dinner. And dinner, I generally do a lot of the cooking, so I prepared a lot of different foods. But I'll have salmon is one of my favorites. I love chicken wings. We make bone broth all the time. We always have bone broth either cooking or sitting in the refrigerator or freezer, but there's not a day that goes by that I don't have any bone broth. And I make my bone broth from chicken feet. We get pastured chicken feet here locally in South Carolina, in Charleston. And it's the best source to get really gelatinous bone broth. It's just awesome. So we have that with dinner, or we make things using the broth as a stock or something to cook with. And then we'll do a few things, go out, we'll spend some time with some neighbors, we'll go out and do some things and shop, and all of a sudden it's 9 o'clock and that's my bedtime. So I go to sleep about 9 and then wake up about 4, 5, maybe 5:30. That's my day.
That sounds fantastic. You know,
it's a good day.
It's a great, great day.
Well, I'll tell you what I do on the weekends, because the weekends are different from the weekdays, because I only work one day a week, usually on Friday. So during the weekends, my wife and I go out to our local farmer's market. We do our shopping at the farmer's market. There are a couple grocery stores that we always shop at. It's Whole Foods and Earth Fare in our local area are our favorites. There is a farm-to-table restaurant that we go to for lunch generally on Sundays, which is awesome. We kind of wear ourselves out in the day and then come back and do the same thing that I did during the week on weekends.
Beautiful. Thanks. Thank you so much for that. I think that was a great success. I will continue to ask that question. Thank you for being a guinea pig.
It's a good question. Yeah, it's a great question.
I thought so too. Now, how can our audience get in touch with you, Dr. Dannenberg?
Well, the easiest way would be my website. So it's drdannenberg.com, as you spelled it out, drdannenberg.com. There is a contact form that you can send an email. I certainly will respond. There are blogs that I write every week, so you can read my blogs, which are kind of interesting. There's a consultation link that if someone wanted to speak to me one-on-one, we can arrange that. There's directions on how to do that. Generally, there's a questionnaire that I have potential clients to fill out and send to me by the online, as well as a 3-day food journal, so I can figure out what they're really eating and what's going on in their mouth and their body. Most of these people have dental questions that are related to other issues, so they send, or they have their dentist send, some digital x-rays to me so I can look at them. I can't diagnose over the internet. I'm not making treatment plans for these patients, but I'm giving them my observation of what I see, maybe some direction as to where they could go and what they could do, and hopefully I can answer the questions that they have for me.
Yes.
And certainly my book. My book is going to be released on July 15th, which I'm excited about. It's being published by a company called ElectraPress.com, and they spelled it a little differently. It's ElectraPress.com. Right now, I think there are 11 pre-publication reviews on their website. So if somebody went to that website, they'd see the reviews that are there already, which is exciting for me. And hopefully, I guess by the middle of June, it'll be available for pre-order on Amazon, and thereafter all the time on Amazon.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to having your book released. I've gotten to read it. I enjoy it thoroughly. Highly, highly recommend it. And thanks for the continued awesome work, Doc.
Thanks, Noah. You're kind. I appreciate it. And you are doing a phenomenal job. Here, just a plug for you. I listen to lots of podcasts, and I've been interviewed by many people. You're a great interviewer, but your podcasts are awesome. You have selected so many great people. I didn't even know there were that many great people, but you have selected them. I mean, it's fantastic. So you are doing an awesome job, you and your people.
Thanks. When we look and, you know, we're releasing one podcast a week, and it's you'd be surprised how many brilliant people are out there that their message needs to get out.
Yeah, and it is surprising. But the nice thing that is today is that there's so many like that milieu of people today. But 10 years ago, you couldn't find 10.
Yeah.
So the demand is there, the education is there, and the word is getting out, which is exciting.
Agree. Thanks again. My name is Dr. Noah DeCora, your co-host, and you are listening to the Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. If you'd like what you've heard today, please share this with your friends and family and encourage them to subscribe on iTunes. You can sign up for our credible weekly email at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com. Thank you, and as my oldest son Hayden says, be awesome and never unawesome.
I love it. I love it.